Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
You hear this guy every day on WGN Radio, every weekday from 4:50 to 6:30 p.m. with your business report and regional weather forecast. And that has been well over 50 years on this station, second only longest time on any station to Vince Scully, announcer for the Los Angeles Dodgers, over 60 years in broadcasting total. He hosts the morning show on Saturday mornings with Max Armstrong, hosts This Week in Agribusiness on RFD TV. He is a Radio Hall of Fame inductee, has received two Oscars in agriculture for both TV and radio, the American Bureau's Distinguished Service Award. He never sleeps. This guy never sleeps. Yet the audience at this time of day, you don't get to hear him very often. You don't get to hear his deep, booming, classic, legendary voice. And he has generously accepted our invitation to chat with us about his book tonight. Please welcome the Big O, Orion Samuelson. Hey, Orion.
Well, good morning to you from the Valley of the Sun, Arizona.
Very good.
Well, you know, it's been part of my daily life, as you pointed out, for 52 years, 52 great years of working with so many great talents. And the opportunity to do that is something that I never dreamed when I was a kid. That's why the book is entitled You Can't Dream Big Enough.
You Can't Dream Big Enough. And I'm holding in my hand, it is, first of all, it is a fabulous read, but it's also a beautiful book. I mean, just the way you tell the stories and getting through so many of the photos that you have in here and letters that you've collected over the years. I mean, it is such a comprehensive story of your life. And, you know, it all started out for you as a young boy from Ontario, Wisconsin. And, you know, dairy farming seemed certainly like it was going to be in your future. Your family had 200 acres. 90 that was tillable for farming. Yep. Mm-hmm. And you found out early on that you had some issues with your hip and your leg.
Well, I came out of eighth grade, went to a one-room eighth-grade country school with 40 kids in eighth grade. So from first grade to eighth grade, you heard everything that was being taught to all of the ages. And as a result, in my case, the teacher said when I got to sixth grade, teacher said, you know, no sense in you going through sixth grade because you've been sitting through it for a while. So I did skip one grade, but then came eighth grade, and it was time to leave the one-room eighth-grade country school and go to town school, as we called it, the high school. And that was a school population of 98 people when I was there. There were 23 people in my class that graduated from there. And it was during that summer doing work on the farm, because that's what you did. As soon as you were able to walk, really, you were doing small chores. And we didn't have electricity on the farm till I was 14. So we milked cows by hand and did everything by hand. Really, you didn't have the power of electricity.
Well, speaking of that, you actually started listening to the radio when you were in high school on a farm radio, which I'm an avid radio like collector. So I've actually got like a Marconi farm radio that's operated by batteries.
Ours was operated by B batteries, and during World War II, B batteries were rationed, and so while I wanted B, because back in those days, the Mutual Network had an action strip, started at 5:15 in the evening with Superman, and then at 5:30, Captain Midnight, and then at 5:45, sure, Tom Mix. And you can see some of those photographs on the wall at WGN, because WGN was one of the base stations for the Mutual Network. So anyway, yes, I did listen a great deal to radio, but I didn't get to listen to the programs I wanted to because Dad said, can't waste batteries on that. We have to listen to see what's happening in the war, because we didn't have a daily newspaper. And so he said, we have to listen to Gabriel Heater and Fulton Lewis and H.V. Kaltenborn to see what's going on. So I didn't really get to listen to as much radio until electricity arrived on the farm in 1947, and that was the year that I was stricken with the leg disease that made it impossible for me to walk for 2 years. And so the vocational agriculture teacher at the high school made it a point every summer of coming out to the farms of his incoming freshman students and encouraging us to take vocational agriculture and to join what was then called the FFA, Future Farmers of America. Today, because there's so much more in agriculture than production farming, it's called the National FFA Organization. But he showed up at the farm, and I was mad at the world.
Sure.
Because I still remember that day in early August in La Crosse, Wisconsin, at the Lutheran General Hospital, when Dr. Walter Jones walked out of the x-ray room and said, to my parents sitting there with me, and I was there because the hip felt like he was out of joint, and it was very uncomfortable. He said, I wish I could tell you this in another way, but he said, son, you're not going to walk for the next 2 years. You'll not be able to use that leg for the next two
pretty,
years.
Pretty traumatic, obviously.
Oh, God, why me? You know, I was right. A tall kid. I was going to play basketball. And now suddenly I'm going to fall 2 years behind my friends who graduated from the one room, eighth grade country school. And I was going to fall 2 years behind on everything. And so the WAG teacher, as he sort of sized up the situation, because I almost snapped at him, and he said, I don't know why you're here, because I'm not going to be in school for 2 years. And he said to me, well, he said, do you think you could study by yourself without being in a classroom? I said, I don't know, but I'm certainly, I guess, willing to try. So for the next 2 years, he brought from high school and came out a couple of nights a week and brought my assignments from the other teachers and took my finished work back so that I did not fall behind.
That's wonderful and
but
rare.
It was at that point when I realized I would not be able to do the heavy work of farming. And listen to radio. I listened to Bert Wilson doing the Chicago Cubs.
On WIND probably at that time, right?
Right, they were. And I listened to WJJD, the Suppertime Frolics, with country music in the evening. And then, of course, WLS was the Prairie Farmer Station.
The Barn Dance.
And they had the National Barn Dance, where people like Gene Autry and Pat Buttram and George Gobel got their start. And so I'm about as bashful, barefoot a country boy as you would find, because I'd never been in front of a group other than the Christmas program at our little country church. But the more I listened, I thought, it sounds like it could be interesting, and it sounds like it could be fun. And so discussed that with the teacher, and he said, well, when you get back on your feet, we'll get you into public speaking. And we'll have Mrs. Woods, the English teacher, get you involved in forensics. And so
he was very encouraging to you, which is wonderful.
So.
And he wanted you to participate in some competitions too, so you can get you rolling. He obviously heard your wonderful voice and knew
yes,
it was the right.
And by then it was beginning to change.
Sure.
And you know, God was good to me. He gave me a voice that I don't hear any differently, but thank God other people do. And so the coach of the basketball team, Joe Ott, said, well, why don't you do the public address announcing at the basketball games? So I did that, and that led me to the career that I've enjoyed for 60 years. And
right.
That's why one of the lessons in the book from my experience is don't evaluate a happening when it happens.
Exactly.
Give it some time, because had I not had the disease, which is known as Legsperthes disease, I probably, Dave, would still be milking cows
right.
in Wisconsin.
Exactly.
And be totally happy.
So. Well, exactly. Well, you know what? I want to talk about, you know, your path that led you to WGN. We're going to take a quick break, and we're talking to WGN's very own Orion Samuelson. It's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN.
Lindholm Roofing has appointments available now to provide you a complete roofing, siding, gutter, and tuck pointing inspection. Call 773-283-7675 or lindholmroofing.com. Tell them that Lou sent you. Lindholm Roofing, their family has your family covered.
So you went to, you ended up going to broadcasting school before you started your first gig in Sparta, Wisconsin.
Indeed, I did, and there were 23 in my high school graduating class, and I was salutatorian, and because of that, received a one-year scholarship at the University of Wisconsin, and
That was helpful.
I look back on the decision my parents had to make because my dad had a sixth grade education. My mother had gone to 2 years of teacher's college, and now their firstborn has a scholarship to the university. And by then I knew I wanted to be a radio announcer, and I got to Madison, and after 3 weeks, all I'm getting is books on writing, journalism, and no opportunity to do anything to learn how to be a radio announcer. And I was homesick and just wasn't feeling all that good. We didn't have a telephone on the farm, so I had to call friends in Ontario and say, if you can bring the folks in, I need to talk to them.
Wow.
At any rate, the discussion, and I look back on how difficult it must have been for them, but Dad finally said, you find a place that'll teach you how to be a radio announcer, and then we will let you leave the university. So the American Institute of the Air on Lake Avenue in Minneapolis, R.C. and Helen Brown, and we called him Brownie. He had been an NBC staff announcer, both polio victims and both suffering from forms of paralysis. But they had that that school put together, the American Institute of the Air, and we'd get there at 7 in the morning, sign on a radio station without a transmitter, and then sign it off at 11 o'clock in the morning and then spend the afternoon going through what we did and how we should have done it better.
So it was live on-air training?
On-air training without the transmitter.
Sure.
And one day you'd be a news announcer, the next day you'd be a disc jockey, the next day you'd be a commercial writer, and so you taught. As a matter of fact, Dave, I learned how to pronounce the name of every famous classical composer in history. I've never had to do that since, never used the names, but that was part of the course. And
sure.
In 6 months, I was a radio announcer.
There you were. And then when you were in Sparta, Wisconsin, you started making $50 a week, which I think you're making a little bit more than that here. Maybe just a little.
More.
A little bit more. And you started off as a polka disc jockey.
I did. Well, you're in
How
Wisconsin.
Fun is that? Yeah, of course.
You're in Wisconsin, and you've got Whoopi John and Harold Luffelmacher and the Six Fat Dutchmen and Cousin Fuzzy and the Cousins and Romy Gaz and the Goslings and Frankie Yankovic and
sure.
the Yanks.
Sure.
And, so I was a polka disc jockey and was having a great time. And the fellow who got me the job there, because it was a brand-new radio station, I did a Saturday evening polka show because it was a daytimer. So in the summertime, you could stay on longer at night. And so they gave me a half-hour polka show that I think was on from 7 to 7:30 in the evening. But a gentleman by the name of Clyde Downing, called Clyde Burrhead Downing, because he had a crew cut, but he was a very funny man. And he was an engineer. He built the radio station for the owners and did the morning show. And so we're from the same town. He was probably 8-10 years ahead of me in high school. But he knew about me, and he said, hey, why don't you come to work? So I went to work there. And then 2 years later, he moved to WHBY in Appleton, Wisconsin, to do the morning show there. And he called me and he said, hey, they need a nighttime disc jockey here. Why don't you come over? So I did. And worked at WHBY on the banks of the Fox River. And then 2 years later, WBAY, Radio TV Green Bay.
Green Bay, mm-hmm.
Owned by the St. Norbertine Fathers, who also owned the Appleton radio station. And, of course, they operated the St. Norbert's College in De Pere. And they owned the stations, and they were real pioneers in farm television. In 1955, they were doing a full hour of live television at noontime every day. They had three farm broadcasters, live band in the studio, and one of the farm broadcasters left, and so the manager up there knew I grew up on a farm, and called and said, we'd like to talk to you. So for the next 4 years, I was at WBAY doing morning radio with Cousin Fuzzy and the Cousins
live in
the studio, and then did the noon show with Russ Wido, who came up from Chicago Television and spent quite a few years there, and Bobby Nelson, who was the weatherman, and he hosted the noon show. And it was a great lesson, Dave. I tell you what, you know, I tell young people today, who, when they come out of college, want to come to work at a major market radio station like WGN. I say, no, start in a smaller market where you can develop your style, make mistakes without getting fired, and then after a few years, then make the transition to a bigger station.
Make the jump. And while you were at BAY, you met Larry Kane, who was doing reports for WGN at the time, correct?
Larry Kane was working for the Union Stockyards in Chicago and doing market reports. He was doing them on WLS, but of course, April 30th of 1960, the Prairie Farmer Station ceased to exist. It became Wonderful Rock and Roll on the 1st of May.
Sure.
And so the WGN Country Fair Show, as it was called at the time, Norm Kraft was the farm broadcaster.
Mm-hmm.
But it really didn't have much of an audience because the Midwest rural audience listened to WLS. But with that changeover, now they had to go to WGN. And yes, Larry Kane would do daily reports. We had a broadcast booth in the exchange building at the stockyards. And he would do daily reports on WGN radio. He was a Wisconsin farm boy, but I didn't know him until I came to Chicago.
And he introduced you to a lot of amazing, legendary folks, too. He introduced you to Bob Hope, Roy Rogers, President Eisenhower, and most importantly, he introduced you to Ward Quall of WGN in the late 1950s, correct?
Well, in 1960, the same year that WLS no longer was Prairie Farmer Station, that was the year of the Kennedy-Nixon campaign for president. And on a Friday afternoon in August, Norm Kraft, who I had met because we have a National Association of Farm Broadcasting, so I'd met Norm and I knew who he was. And on a Friday afternoon, he resigned on the air and walked out. And Ward Quall, who was president of the company, thoroughly believed, at that time we were a complete clear channel radio station, 50,000 watts, no other station in the country on our frequency.
Sure.
Covered the nation at night, and Ward Quall said, as a 50,000 watt clear channel station, we have an obligation to serve the audience far beyond Chicago. And that meant serving farmers and ranchers across the country, and so he was not a happy camper when Norm walked out on a Friday afternoon without any warning at all. Norm thought that if Senator Kennedy was elected, he could become Secretary of Agriculture.
Sure.
Well, didn't happen.
Right.
So Ward immediately started a search and called Larry Kane, and he called Lane Beatty, who was head of the communications department at U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington. When I heard about it, I briefly thought, gee, I wonder if I should apply, maybe just to see where I am in the industry right now.
Sure.
I've only been doing it for 4 years, and then I thought, no, there are too many other well-known farm broadcasters out there, so I don't think I'll apply. So I didn't.
But they came to you, and at that time, you were still hemming and hawing about coming, and you told Gloria that if you had WGN on your resume, you could go anywhere.
That's true. But I tell you, it was a very difficult decision, and I look back on it now, and I think, oh, my God, look at what you almost did. But I hadn't been in there in the business more than 4 years, and so I was a pretty big fish in a little pond in Green Bay, and, you know, at that time, I was making $1,000 a month, and I thought I was doing pretty well.
Not bad scratch for back then.
Yeah, and I hemmed and hawed, and Bruce Dennis, the program director, was very patient because he said, let us know in 5 days, and end of 5 days, I still didn't know. So I called him, and I said, I just don't know what to do, Bruce. He said, why don't you and your wife come down to Chicago for a weekend and take a look at housing and all that? And I had just built a house in Green Bay, 4-bedroom, 2-story for $24,800.
tough to leave.
And I start looking at real estate pages in the Chicago Tribune, and my God, a house like that would cost $45,000. But after the visit down there, I got back to Green Bay, and that's when I thought, my golly, you know, if I get WGN on my resume, I'll stay there for 5 years, and then I'll go back to Wisconsin, buy a radio station,
or
and
50.
Spend the rest of my life.
Or 50.
Yeah, that was 52 years ago, Dave, so I guess I'll stay.
You'll stay. All right. We have finally made it to WGN, and your first show was the milking show that was on at 5 o'clock in the morning, and I also found out that you actually hosted the barn dance from 61 to 69 when it was brought over from WLS to WGN.
That's right, because when WLS made the change, they fired everybody there, and they had a lot of musical talent because they used talent throughout the day. And I remember after that happened and I came on the scene at WGN 61 early in my career there, I went to Ward Qualt. And I said, Ward, you know, that's such an institution in this part of the country. The National Barn Dance from the 8th Street Theater, which stood where the International Ballroom of the Conrad Hilton Hotel now stands. And I said, do you suppose that maybe we could bring them over here? And he liked the idea. And so during that time, from 61 to 69, I was down at the station every Saturday. We'd start about 3 o'clock with rehearsal. 6:30 to 7, we did a live 30-minute television show. And then we did it in Studio 3 at Bradley Place, where the WGN pipe organ had been built in. And so at 7 o'clock, we would chase that audience of 200 people out and then bring in another audience. And from 8 until 9:30, we did the WGN Barn Dance live on radio. We had Bob Atcher. We had Donald Red Blanchard, funniest man I've ever known. We had Arky the Arkansas Woodchopper, the Johnson Sisters, Dolph Hewitt and the Sage Riders. And
you saved the show. You actually saved the show from extinction.
Well, yeah, I guess I did. I don't know if somebody else would have picked it up or not. And the barn dance, the TV barn dance, did go into syndication, so it was carried on more than Channel 9. We were not a superstation at that point.
Sure.
And so we had a good 8-year run, and then Dolph Hewitt and the Sage Riders worked with me on the noon show when we'd go out to county and state fairs. Worked with some interesting people. When I arrived at WGN, the morning show, 5 to 5:30, was milking time because we were hitting a lot of dairy farmers out in the barn milking, and we still do at that time of the day. And then at noon, it was country fair, and we had live music every day. We had Eddie Mum and the Country Fair Boys with singer Elaine Rogers, and if you're a student of radio broadcasting, Budweiser used a musical line, where there's life, there's Bud.
Right.
And Elaine Rogers was the voice of that. She made a fair amount of money over the years because it was used a lot. But one day of the week, they had to be off because of the contract. And so then guess who I had in the studio? Bob Trendler.
Oh.
The WGN Orchestra.
That's right. He was
16-piece orchestra. On what was then Country Fair, the noon show.
Right.
And
so the show was really more entertaining and entertainment than it was informational at that time.
I would say 50-50.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we did a lot of information, and we had the live reports from the Board of Trade on the grain market and from the Union Stockyards with Larry Kane and Bob Hood and some other market reporters who worked out there. And we would take the show, the noontime show, on the road probably 45 times a year. We would, of course, when the International Livestock Show was in Chicago, that was generally a 9-day run, and we'd originate from there. We'd go to the Indiana State Fair, Illinois State Fair, Wisconsin, and Iowa, and went to probably 2 or 3 dozen county fairs. And it was a lot of fun. As I've said over the years, I probably have had the opportunity to meet personally more WGN listeners than anybody on the staff.
I
because
bet you have.
I'm out there a great deal on conventions and speeches and that sort of thing. And while some people, like Uncle Bobby, was not comfortable in front of a live audience, I enjoy it because when you do a radio show in the studio, you have a producer and an engineer, and you don't get a whole lot of response there.
Well, you're talking to yourself, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. But man, when you're on stage in front of an audience, you know right away if they like you or if they don't like you.
Well, speaking of Bob, you know, you have a lot of great, it's totally true. And speaking of Bob, you know, you have some great chapters in this book about your memories, you know, working and doing, you know, you've worked with so many, I mean, over 52 career, you've worked with everyone that has really been a icon as much as you have on this station, and working with Wally and Bob and Spike and Roy Leonard. Tell me a little bit about Wally.
You probably noticed in the book, Dave, I wrote about people I have worked with, not
yes.
about people I'm currently working. I guess that'll be the second book.
Right.
But Wally was an interesting person, and I was so impressed. He had the fastest mind of anybody I've ever known in radio. I don't care what a phone caller threw out at him. He had an instant response, and it was generally very, very funny. And I first heard Wally because when I was working nights as the disc jockey in WHBY Appleton, I'd get off at midnight, and I'd tune to WLW in Cincinnati, where
right.
Wally was
where
doing
he started.
The overnight
mm-hmm,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, he would take recorded interviews sent out by Hollywood with various movie stars, and they'd send the answers recorded, and then he'd do the questions. But what he always did, he'd ask the question and then play not the next answer, but the second next answer. And it made no sense.
Right.
And so when I got to Chicago in 1960, and I start looking, my golly, I'm working with people that, you know, I never, ever dreamed I'd know.
Right.
Eddie Hubbard was doing mornings. We had Jack Brickhouse and Eddie Hubbard doing afternoon. We had Jack Taylor and Virginia Gale. And then as we went on down the line, Wally doing the mornings when Eddie moved out. And then Uncle Bobby, and then Spike, and then Greg, and now Johnny B. And you look at that lineup and you think, am I in the right place, really? But Wally,
There's so few people that have actually hosted mornings here. I mean, really, you can count on one hand, really, how many
right.
people in your time that was here that hosted.
Yeah, yeah, really. It was phenomenal. And, you know, they were all number one in the market. That was the thing. Mornings, we were the rulers of the Chicago radio world. But Wally was, he worked hard, and he did 4 hours. And so when he'd finish, he'd go into the cafeteria at Bradley Place to have breakfast. And you just did not sit at the table where Wally was sitting. Not that he wouldn't let you, but you could just tell he was winding down after four intense hours. And my relationship with Wally was interesting because when I came on the scene doing livestock and grain markets and talking agriculture, he made it fairly plain that nothing wrong with that, but it shouldn't be on a Chicago downtown radio station. That should be up to the smaller stations in rural communities. They're the ones that should do agriculture. We shouldn't be doing that.
And how did you react to that?
Well, I said, okay. I mean, he wasn't nasty about it. It was just the way he felt.
Yeah.
And but I thought, I got to win this guy over one way or another. And so I started working and in trying to impress him with the fact that there's a huge audience out there that is a very important part of our population. They feed us and put a roof over our head and clothes on our back and that sort of thing. So when he was doing this, when he started the Neediest Kids Fund, I met with my friends at the Illinois Farm Bureau, and I said, is there something we can do to put money into Wally's fund? And they said, yeah, we'll get our members to donate an acre of corn, and when we harvest it, the proceeds of the sale will go to the Neediest Kids Fund. So that allowed me to bring Wally out to a farm, and he agreed, rather reluctantly, he agreed. And instead of giving him $10,000, the Farm Bureau folks raised $30,000.
Got his
that
attention.
That really impressed him.
Yeah.
That really impressed him.
Yeah.
And as you note in the book, in the letters, two of the prize letters were written to me. Because later on when I would chide Wally about, well, you tried to get rid of me, and he vigorously deny it. I never did. And in the two letters that I've included in the book, they were typewritten by him at the beginning of the Alzheimer's. And I tell you, they just bring tears to my eyes.
It's beautiful. And there's beautiful letters in this book that it's really an amazing collection that you have put in here. And I want to talk about that, Orion, and much more when we come back. We're talking to WGN's very own Orion Samuelson. The book is You Can't Dream Big Enough. It's Dave Plyer on 720 WGN. When we just cut out for a break, we were talking about all the great photos and letters that you have in this book. There's amazing photos, not only from your childhood and your early years in radio, but, you know, you've got pictures in here, you know, from the early days of WGN with, you know, Roy Rogers and Dinah Shore and Mitch Miller, Dizzy Dean to President Bush and Oprah. I mean, it just never ends with you.
That's why I titled the book, You Can't Dream Big Enough. And, you know, when I talk to young people today, the 4-H FFA, and last May, Chancellor Phyllis Wise of the University of Illinois invited me to deliver the commencement address at the graduation last May, and that was the theme there. You can't dream big enough. And I say this not to brag, but sitting on that three-legged milking stool on a cold January morning as a teenager, milking cows. I couldn't have dreamed I would go to 44 countries with a television crew to look at agriculture, that I would meet seven presidents, that I would work with every Secretary of Agriculture going back to Ezra Taft Benson in the Eisenhower administration, that I would go to dinner at the White House, that I would shake hands with Fidel Castro and Mikhail Gorbachev.
Pictures in the book of that as well. Yep.
Yeah, I could never, ever have dreamed that, Dave. Never. And you know, it's all happened, and so it started out as something, well, I've talked about it for 20 years, and because when I do speeches, people come up and say, oh, you have a lot of stories, you ought to put it in a book. But last January, Gloria, my wife, and my colleague of 35 years, Max Armstrong, said, time to quit talking and start writing. And so we did in April, and on the 1st of November, it came off the printing press, and
Well, I hope it's only part one of two, because it's just I feel like there's still not enough in here. I mean, I'm looking at these letters from, you know, you mentioned Wally and Bob Collins, letters from Paul Harvey and President George Bush and Ronald Reagan, Mayor Daley. I mean, the letters are absolutely incredible. I mean, just an amazing career here.
Yeah, the handwritten one-line note from Bob Collins. Unbelievable.
Yeah, it's
one line.
Right.
Handwritten. I don't remember.
You really are one of the few people that matter a lot in my life.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And this was a man I couldn't stand for the first 6 months on WGN. I thought it was the end of the radio station because he was so totally different from Wally Phillips and from Roy Leonard and from the other people. And I thought, this is it. It's over.
Well, you know, change is challenging. It's hard for the listeners too when things change.
Oh, yeah.
They change quite often.
It really is. But when we lost him in the mid-air plane collision, he was my closest friend at the radio station. I had a home in Arizona. He was building one, and his saying was, "Well, one of these days we'll quit and we'll sit on the front stoop and watch the desert go by." And I'm not ready to do that yet, but
no.
He's up there waiting. So.
He is, absolutely. Yeah. You've got some great pages in this book called Samuel Says. Talk about that a little bit, please.
I started that, I think, back in 1976 when we started doing the television show. And it's Samuelson Says, which is my personal bias, prejudice, and opinion. I don't expect people to always agree with me, but I do like to stimulate thinking. And I do one every week. It's broadcast on WGN Radio every Saturday morning on the Saturday Morning Show. And it's also on the television stations and on RFD TV that carry our TV show and syndicated in several newspapers across the heartland. And I get some pretty strong responses, people who really question my relationship with my mother and some of their language and and take a serious issue with some of the things that I propose, and others who say, right on, you got to keep doing it. But I'm a reporter, basically, but with 2% of our population involved in production agriculture. And Friday, I'm going to meet a lot of them out here in Arizona. It's the Arizona National Livestock Show at the Arizona State Fairgrounds. And I'm going to spend the day there with cowboys and ranchers and people who
something you love to do.
Yeah. And I love to do that. And those people need a voice bigger than what they've got. And in Chicago, where you have so many people who are what I call non-agricultural consumers who depend on these people, they need to understand what farmers and ranchers have to do to put food on the table. And I look at that as a mission, and so that's what I try to do with Samuelson Says. This is what these great people do. And they do it against some of the greatest odds, weather, and we've certainly seen that in 2012, and government policy or lack of, and just so many things. But they keep coming back every year, and they do what they do. And I just try to give them a little bigger voice.
And you've got some great excerpts from a lot of those in here. And then in 2010, of course, you know, you had a Chicago street named after you on Illinois and City Front Plaza. And I think the special thing for you is that it intersects with Bob Collins Way.
Yeah, on the same signpost as Bob Collins Way. And as I've said many times, I said, can you imagine a dairy farm kid from Wisconsin having a street in Chicago named after him?
Awesome.
And, of course, what I've been saying now, Dave, is 10 years ago I couldn't spell author, and now I are one.
You are one. That's great. What is your favorite part? We've got a couple minutes left here. What is your favorite part of getting up every morning and doing what you do?
I get up early because I'm afraid I'll miss something. So I do get up early, but my church has played an important part in my life, from the little country church in Wisconsin that still stands there and is still an active congregation. But one of the lines I like to use is advice on getting up early in the morning. And the first thing I say is set your clock radio to the time you have to get up. Don't cheat. Don't set it early. And then when you have to get up, set the clock radio for that. And when it comes on, you roll out of bed, put your feet firmly on the floor, and say, good morning, God, instead of good God morning.
And you are so
that
right.
Kind of shapes the way the day goes. But I have been blessed. I'm probably one of the world's greatest power nappers outside of Thomas Edison, who I understand could do it. Because I can sit in a chair and just put my head down and take a 5-minute nap, regardless of what's happening around me, and I'm just
learning how to do that myself. It's a difficult task, but I'm just starting to learn that myself.
Yeah, and once you get it done, you realize how lucky you are, because
sure.
When I hit the pillow at night, I'm gone in 30 seconds. But the ability to power nap is something that is very, very important
sure.
in my life.
Sure,
least.
Sure. Well, Orion, thank you so much for staying up with us tonight. It means a lot that you took the time to chat with me tonight. The book is You Can't Dream Big Enough, and there's several places you can get it, but money place you can get it. TheBigOBook.com is a great resource to go to. Amazon.com, if you're downtown in Chicago, you can get it from the Museum of Broadcast Communications Museum store. All kinds of places.
And the WGN website.
And the WGN website
at
WGNradio.com. Thank you so much, Orion.
Thank you for the opportunity, Dave. As I say, I have worked with a lot of great people that I've enjoyed, and I'm glad to see you coming on board.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.